Welcome back to the Royal Studies podcast. I'm delighted to be featuring in this episode a roundtable with three researchers from the eRegine project, a really exciting digital humanities project in the field of queenship and royal studies. So before we begin, I just wanted to introduce the three guests who will be joining us today. So leading the group is Professor Ana Maria Rodriguez from the University of Lisbon, someone who is well known to those of us who work in queenship and royal studies, as she's been leading the charge with her colleague Manuela Santos Silva on Portuguese queenship for many years. She's done some fantastic work in this area, looking at Portuguese medieval queenship from the queen's estates and revenues to their political activity, and they're also their religious and artistic patronage. She's looked at several different medieval queens, including Leonor de Lencastre, Maria de Aragon, and Leonor de Aragon as well. So her works will be listed in the show notes. You can find out more about the many publications which she's been involved with over the last few decades of her fantastic career in queenship studies. Joining us as well is Inês Olaya, who's a PhD candidate in medieval history at the University of Lisbon, who is working with Ana Maria Rodriguez on her thesis titled By the Grace of God, Queen of Portugal, Queen's Functions and Practices in Medieval Portugal, which she has a scholarship for. Again, she's another figure that will be well known to those of you who work in queenship studies, particularly if you work on Iberian or Portuguese queenship. She's already been very active publishing articles, including the study of history of emotions, an inquest into Filipa of Coimbra, the sister of Queen Isabel, who is the wife of Alfonso V, also doing a study on the rule of the Queens Teresa and Sancha over towns in Portugal, and also has done a work on the itineraries of the queens during the time of Manuel I. So some fantastic publications already out from Inês, and more to come. And finally, we have Pedro de Sousa, who is a third year student at the University of Lisbon, who is working on the project. So for this perspective of someone who's actually been really deeply involved with inputting the data for the database, Pedro is also one of the founders and directors of the History Students Union at the University of Lisbon, which has as its goals to unite the students and spread historical knowledge. So that's a little bit of background on all three of our guests. And again, check out the show notes for more about each of them and their publications. Okay, so I think the very first thing that we want to kind of tackle is really thinking about how the project got started and what the inspiration was behind it. Ana Maria, could you tell us a bit about that?
Okay, well, the idea for this project originated from the observation that in almost all European countries, the documentation of royal chancelleries has been published, in some cases, even since the 19th century. But in contrast, the documentation of queens is mostly unpublished, unknown, and much of it has been lost. It must be sought with great dedication and care in a wide variety of public and private collections, including religious institutions or powerful families from the past. And even when in some countries queens' chancelleries have been preserved, they are usually in poor condition, their documents often poorly indexed, and if published, transcribed ambiguously or even with errors. It's a well-known problem for historians focusing on women's and gender history. The documentation issued by women or concerning them has been destroyed or neglected over the centuries because it was considered less important. Modern historians who have come across some of these documents have used them for their work, but downplaying or even concealing the fact that they were issued by women or the significant presence of women therein. This makes the study of women in history particularly challenging. Therefore, the eRegine project, whose full title is Writing and Queens, Royal Chancelleries as Instruments of Power, is a digital humanities project aimed at reconstructing queen's chancelleries and making the documentation issued by medieval queens available to researchers, as well as to the general public, in order to be studied by us and other researchers, leading to a better understanding of the lives and works of these queens.
Oh, thank you so much for that. That's really, really helpful. Now, I was really lucky to see this in action at the International Medieval Congress in Leeds last summer, where you guys had a magnificent kind of demonstration of the database. But for our listeners who may not have had the chance to kind of see it in action, Inej, can you tell us a bit about the database, how it's set up, and how researchers can use it?
Yeah, sure. The database is mainly a searchable text database. We hope to have it ready by the end of the year. We hope. We really hope. So the idea is that a researcher can be in the website, in the database website, search for a keyword, and the system will provide results within the text of the documents and the summary, so any piece of information attached to it. Right now, when you search something on the database, there aren't very many documents there, but there are some. It will not provide you with search results within the text of the documents because it needs some work. So, for example, the spellings need to be all the same so people can find that specific word in all the documents. So it's not finalized, but you can already do a few things with it. Each document will ideally be accompanied by a picture of the document. So each transcription will have the picture of the original document and a set of information that will help the researcher to know more about it. For example, where it was published before. Any bibliography we found that is helpful for some reason will be noted there. Or, for example, on the summary, we will note where that town mentioned in the document is today, or if it changed names. So we can add a little bit of context and information to it. So this is another set of data, but it's also there to help people use it and get some research done with our assistance.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it really shows how that kind of interactive ability of a database to kind of contextualize and add information is something you couldn't have got if you looked at the document in person or if you saw it in a edited collection, a kind of the kind of old tra fashioned transcribed ones that we're so often working with. So I know the project is starting with a preliminary phase. Obviously, you have to kind of build it up. And at the moment, you've been concentrating mostly on the 14th century. So I was really interested about why this particular century was the right one to start with. Is it something about the survival of documents, or maybe those one were the most interesting? Pedro, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I can explain why is Pedro the person who is in charge of this part, because we were lucky enough to have Pedro as our junior researcher. The funding of the project allowed this. And so he started his work by collecting all the published documents of the queens in order to be able to check them and then transcribe them in the actual transcription measures that we use today. And so this is why we had a lot of documents from the 14th century, because it was apparently the century that has been more studied by other researchers. So maybe now Pedro can explain exactly how he proceeded.
So, my work process as a grant holder in Yirrigunai project started with a search within two publications of 19th century of two historians, Francisco de Fonseca Benevides and Francisco de Lafiganière, where some documents were already transcribed. Well, with this information, I created a mini index, a mini database, a simple thing in Excel to organize the informations or the documents that were already transcribed, the titles, the page numbers, to help to organize this small information. The next step was the transcription process, when I transcribed not just the documents that were already published by in these two books, but I transcribed at all 93 documents from four queens: Beatriz of Castile, Isabel of Aragon, Leonor Telles, and Leonor of Aragon. Mainly from the 14th century as you may see, unless Leonor of Aragon. As I said, I transcribe not only documents from referred publications, not just the published documentation, but also unpublished, which resulted in some many archive visits, which was a really, really good academical experience for someone who likes to do this kind of work, as you may imagine. After the transcription process came the revision one by Professor Susana Tavares Pedro, our paleography specialist in the project. And in the meanwhile, it was the uploading process in the daily work, uploading the documents right after the revision to our database. The uploading was the process when it was uploaded the transcription and the metadata of the document, for example, title, date, references to previous publications, this type of data. In the meanwhile, I also wrote a little paper for our blog, a little text about two documents of Dona Leonor Telles, which you may read in our blog. In conclusion, it was a period of 10 months of lots of work, but with a huge reward and an experience that was one of the biggest academic things, academic realizations I've had in my life.
So maybe you could tell us a bit more about the sister project that Iragne is connected to, Female Power and Patronage, Portugal, France, and Burgundy in the 13th to the 16th century. So can you tell us a bit how these projects are connected and how they're going to work together collaboratively?
Sure. Well, this is the project was submitted by myself and the French researcher Muriel Gaud-Ferragu to a Franco-Portuguese cooperation program named after the great Portuguese poet Fernando Pessoa. And because I knew that Muriel was also editing electronically the documentation of the Queens of France, and it seemed to me that it could be useful to join forces and see how we could reconcile our databases in order to test the expansion of the project at a European level. However, this cooperation program does not fund databases, but only the organization of scientific meetings to present the research results and funds also the travel of the two teams between Portugal and France. The aspect of the Queen's actions that has been privileged by our research in this project has been patronage, both artistic, literary, or religious. Several activities have already been carried on, and many others are planned, which we usually announce on our website and social media, so you can know they are going to happen, and which Inês will talk about later on.
Fantastic. So you know that the ultimate aim of the project is something that you want to expand. You want to ideally include all of the queens of medieval Western Europe, which is wonderful, but obviously that's a huge task. So what kind of strategy do you have for building this up? Are you going to kind of go geographically, maybe kind of, working from Iberia outwards, or is it a case of maybe sticking with the 14th century and kind of, thinking kind of, building that up as a comparative, if you like. So thinking, to give us a bit of an idea of kind of how you plan to attack this if the funding makes itself available.
Yeah, well, we undoubtedly aim to complete the collection and publication of the documents pertaining to medieval queens of Portugal. And we are currently working towards that goal. And Muriel Gaud-Ferragu also is currently working on the documentation of the queens of France. However, to progress to other kingdoms, we need to apply to European funding program. as many questions arise regarding the funding of both research, the servers where the databases will be stored, their maintenance, and so on. So at this point, Muriel and I are exploring which funding program would be most suitable to this kind of project. And we are also reaching out to colleagues who may be interested in collaborating with us in different countries. So I take this opportunity to issue an appeal. Anyone interested in editing the documentation of queens from their country should contact us to collaborate in this future project. We are expecting many contacts.
Oh, wonderful. I'm hoping the podcast can do its best to kind of advertise the project and bring new collaborators for you. That's wonderful. So, in terms of when you start this new phase, is kind of if you do get the funding and you are able to kind of expand it, what do you think will be the biggest challenges that you might have when you start to bring other countries and kingdoms in comparison with Portugal? And how do you plan to kind of deal with that kind of reconciliation, if you like? Inês?
Hey, I'm here. I'd say that even within the Portuguese documentation and the Portuguese queens, we have some challenges that probably will reflect in other when we try to bring other countries and other kingdoms into the database. I'd say that we have probably three main issues that we have been dealing with. First, we have the problem of language, and this will be probably also our main issue when we bring other countries and kingdoms into the database. Because for Portugal, before the 1290s, all the documentation is in Latin. So it's a different set of skills to transcribe documents in Latin, and the database needs to adjust to another language too. Then, when we get to the 15th century, mainly, not just, but mainly, and we try to look at queens that write in their own hands, that write abroad, we start shifting languages. So Philippa of Lancaster, when she writes to England, she writes in French. So it's again another skill to transcribe, and the database needs some adjustment too. When we get mid 15th century, early 16th, we have queens writing in their own hands, and they speak Castilian by birth. So sometimes they write in Castilian, sometimes they mix Portuguese and Castilian, so we need to be really aware of what they are trying to say and how it's working. So we can be as truthful as possible to what they are saying without sliding into one language or the other. In a smaller scale, probably, at least I hope, we have the problem of the shifting of the writing styles. So we need to be good paleographers in a very wide range of writing styles of scripts. And we know that when we look at the 16th century and the 13th, it's not the same world when we think about paleography. And when they write in our own hands, we need to be aware that these are people that were trained to write, but they are not scribes. And so if we have a Castilian woman that comes to Portugal, she's used to the writing styles of Castile. It's another handwriting, if I can, God, say so. And it's another, sometimes it's even slightly different in terms of the abbreviation systems. So we need to adjust to all of that. I can imagine that when we bring in another kingdom into the database, that will be even a bigger problem, a bigger issue to adjust to. And then we also have the problem of quantity. So as time goes by, more documents have survived. The growth is absolutely exponential by the late 15th, early 16th centuries. I can give you a rough example. So one of the queens of Portugal that survives the transition to the 16th century, as if I'm not mistaken, as original documents that survived around 150 documents. So if we look back and try to find a comparison point, this is probably five times bigger than any queen for the late 13th century, even sometimes 14, 15. So we need to adjust a little bit to that too. So I'd say that these are the three main issues that will probably also be true when we look outside of Portugal.
Yes, for sure. So I would say that the problem of incorporating other languages and even other alphabets may be a very big challenge. From a technical technical standpoint, we need to test the platform, which was built based on the Portuguese case, which is a Latin language, with the TikTok system, to see what adaptations need to be made, and if it's just a question of adaptation or if we have to build a new platform, because changes may be very important. Similarly, the transcription criteria for medieval documentation is different from country to country. So this will need to be taken into account, and we will need to determine what can be standardized and what needs to remain different from one country to another in a case-to-case basis, in constant dialogue with the local teams while building the necessary work tools. And furthermore, it will also be necessary to install the databases on much more powerful servers than the one we have now because of the exponential number of documents we will find, as Inés has just said. So we'll have to ensure their longevity too. And of course, this entails significant expenses, hence the need to obtain European funding for this new phase.
No, I completely understand it. You know, as you grow, then all of the problems and challenges are going to become bigger. But then on the other hand, so much more reward as well to be able to compare and bring these queens and their chancelleries in contact and, you know, comparison with one another. So I think it'll be wonderful. And I wish you all the best with the funding application. So thinking also about kind of the impact that this project is already having, obviously you guys have been very busy giving lots of papers at conferences, running workshops, and you're really being active with outreach and even working with schools, which is great to see as well. So tell us a bit more about what activities that you have planned going forward and how listeners who are interested might take part, or where they can kind of see you speaking about the project next.
So I'd say we have two groups of activities planned or that we have participated in before and we know that we want to go back and do it again. So in terms of scheduled academic activities, we have at least two conferences planned with our sister project. One of them is titled Powerful Women in Their Own Words, a conference in Lisbon in May, so by the middle of May this year. And the other one is also a conference titled Gracia de Regina, the Written Acts and the Patronage of Powerful Women between the 13th and the 16th centuries, this time in Paris. So these are the two main events that we are going to attend, but we are also going to participate in the Kings and Queens Conference and in IMC Leeds, this time in partnership with Project Monarcas. So this is a Spanish project. I won't go too much into detail, but we are, of course, collaborating because there's lots of Iberian scholars working on queens, so we can all team up together. For the general public, especially thought for the general public, we have participated last year in two main events that I think worked really well, and we want to go back. One was the European Researchers' Night. It was a very interesting experience because we did something very simple that I think worked really well. Me, Pedro, and Professor Manuela went to the event with just pictures of documents, basically, and we tried to explain to people what we were doing and gave them a little crash course on paleography and queenship. The reactions were really interesting because people could look at something that these women produced and comment on it and ask about it. And little kids, for example, were really happy by the fact that they could read it. They could actually understand it, and they were really excited about it. So it was really simple, but I think it worked really well, and we need to keep going with something like that. We also participated in the Week of Science, Semana de Ciencia. This is an event, a week-long event, promoted by the Portuguese Foundation for Science and Technology. It's not one night in one place with the general public coming and going. It's more of like everybody suggest something through that week. So we had a lecture last year, an open lecture with a little bit of a provocative title. And I think people went there asking themselves, what are they going to talk about? Because it was not obvious. So I think it also worked really well. We had a big crowd attending, but we have also been writing for the general public in general publications, magazines, and so on. And we are planning a course for the general public. It's not too structured yet, but it's in our thoughts, so to speak. And we are also planning some teachers' formation activities or courses so they can bring the news, if so to speak, to the students, middle grade students, high school students around that. And if this all looks like a lot, it's a little bit, it's a lot. But as Professor Ana Maria says, people can go to our website and our social media and try to see if anything interests them, and they can see there how they can participate and how they can find us and track our activities there.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's great to see all that you guys are doing. Again, not just in the sphere of royal studies and academia, but again, bringing the general public and yeah, the wider community of scholarship into the field. And this is such a great example of where humanities research is kind of being really love, you know, blended with science and technology, with databases and kind of leveraging technical tools to help us all get more out of these documents and make them more widely available. So digital humanities at its best. Thank you so much for all of the Iregine team who's come to join us again. We've had Ines Olaya, Ana Maria Rodriguez, and Pedro Sousa. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we look forward to hearing more about this project as it develops. Let's hope you guys get that funding bid so that we can see it expand exponentially in the future. Thanks
And
again for joining
we
us.
thank you for this opportunity to make our project known by other people. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. I'm sure our listeners are going to be very excited and they'll be keen to hear more as you progress the project.